Despite all the hard shit that you're going through, you just have to believe with all your fucking heart that you're going to make it. Welcome to the One of Zero Show, Episode 1, Advice for Hard Days. I'll be taking questions for you guys in the audience, and we'll be doing this live.
Alex.
What's up?
What's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm rocking.
Hey, dude, first and foremost, man, I know you probably heard this 1,000 times over, but thank you. And not only for doing something like this, but the impact that you're making on people's lives. I think you probably have a number of lives that you're impacting, but you could just take that and multiply it by 1,000. And that's real talk.
Big number. Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you. What can I help you with, man?
Not much, man. I mean, I guess not much and also a lot, but I run a group and personal training gym in Jersey, and cool. It's basically our tools are kettlebells, community breath work. And the focus for me is longevity. And the one question that I had that's been brewing in my mind since I'm pretty early in my career, in the sense of 2 years, coming up on 3 years, is what's the one question that you wish you would have asked yourself earlier in your entrepreneurial career when faced with a little bit of uncertainty and direction? And I know that's probably a hefty question. And like, just to give you context for myself too, it's like 90% of my business is in person. In terms of online, that's the kind of the direction of whether or not I really want to go towards. More specifically, you know, creating almost like a Wattify version of kettlebells platform. You know, so it's just trying to figure out what the next step is going to be, you know.
Okay, so I guess me asking myself a question is always going to be different than you asking something for you, because we're different people, right? And we have different goals. And so everything usually ladders up to like, what's the goal? What's the why? And so like right now, do you have like a monetary goal? Do you have an impact goal? And believe me, I have no issues if you're like, I just want to make a certain amount of money. Like, I get that. Because any of the businesses that you just mentioned, so whether it's the brick and mortar business, or you want to start doing training for those people online, or it's doing the Wattify version, which is basically no service and just providing workouts and whatnot. All of those are potential businesses, but pursuing all of them at the same time will virtually guarantee that you don't succeed at any of them. And so the biggest issue when you're starting out is just picking the path and being willing to commit to it with the uncertainty that comes with it. Because like every entrepreneurial path has uncertainty, like, and that's what makes entrepreneurship hard. It's literally the not knowing and the pain of suffering consequences for ignorance, for things that you've learned now that you're like, if I had only known then what I know now. And that's every entrepreneur until the day they die. And it's just wishing that it were different that causes a lot of the struggle. So which of these things, of the three that I just mentioned, like which of those is the one that like lights you up the most?
I mean, in-person training, obviously, like we live in a small beach town community where everybody knows everybody, and it's fun. Cool. It's family. It's convenient. I will say there's that comfort factor that it almost in one scope is very beneficial because it is so comfortable. But in reality too, like comfort is the enemy of achievement and growth. So it's like, I know like the comfortable side is the in-person and it's the community and it's fun. It's family, friends. Whereas the uncomfortable, more challenging, but also very big picture wise would be the online going full tilt that side. Now I've breached into the gap of like 3 day launches, 4 day launches of, you know, small ticket, low ticket offers. But in terms of, you know, trying to scale and make an impact on the world.
Yeah.
Then
the world's really big. That's always really hard. Cause I remember we had an event with gym owners and somebody stood up. I said, what's your mission? They're like, I want to impact 1 million lives. So I was like, did you have a brick and mortar location that has like 200 members? Like, if you really want to do that, then you would actually just, you would approach it very differently, or you'd have a time horizon that's the rest of your life, right? It's like one or the other. If you're like, I want to do that in 3 years, you wouldn't start with a brick and mortar location. And so the thing is that what you said earlier is like, you feel comfortable and it sounds like you want to grow. I just want to make sure that's correct before I like you.
Absolutely.
Okay. So there was like an underlying assumption, at least that was unspoken. And I just want to draw attention to it, which was, you're like, the brick and mortar thing is comfortable. It's family, it's friendly, it's fun. I'm assuming it's profitable. I'm assuming you're making some money doing that. The thing is like, you could like just doing more of what you're currently doing and saying like, how do I open a second location? Or how do I, you know, like how do I open like five locations over the next 5 years or whatever it is? That would produce probably just as much of a challenge as going online would, except you already have 2 years of learnings on how to run that business where you have none in the online space.
Yeah.
And so like, you always just want to stack knowledge within a specific vertical so that you just go deeper and deeper on it, because that's where the compounding returns happen. Like the richest people that I know have been in the same space for 40 years. They just know everything there is to know about the space. And like, that's how they've made their money. And so with what you're doing, like, you can either open a location that's not necessarily in a cheap beach town and test your mettle and see how good you are at actually scaling a team, you know, hiring somebody else, seeing if somebody else, if you can actually incentivize people, build a culture so that people want to work for you, that you can recreate the success. And that'll show you whether the success that you had was because of you or because of your ability as a businessman, right? Because like, you can be a charismatic, razzle dazzle, dancing bear in any brick and mortar business and it will work.
Yeah.
It'll work. Surface with a smile always works, right? And it's just hard to scale because most people don't care as much as owners do. But if you can create the model that has the incentives and the training in place and the procedures that can consistently create that 5 out of 5 experience that allow a second location to have the same amount of success as your first location, then you have something that absolutely can scale and create lots of enterprise value over time. So I would say either scale that or basically dial down your in person to as little as humanly possible of your time and then go all in on the online thing. But trying to do both will be very hard, because what will happen is you'll start to do some online stuff. You'll start to see some traction. Your gym will start going down, but that's your main source of income. Then you'll hop back to the gym, the online will dip, and you'll go back and forth. And so that's why I'm so big on just committing to whatever thing is, because any of them would work, but you just have to be all in on it.
Yeah. And I know we're running out of time, but I guess on that point too, it's like the one pillar that I guess I failed to mention was the freedom and flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, this being a seasonal town.
And do the other thing. And if you haven't gone to the gym for a year, then maybe you'll do a second gym. And so I think no matter what path you do, this is probably a perfect end for this, which is you either are going to do the online thing after you figure out how to outsource the gym or delegate it and hire people who are awesome, or you decide you're going to do a second location. Either way, you're going to have to start with outsourcing the first gym.
That's two birds, one stone. Yeah. No.
Appreciate you, AJ.
Hey, appreciate you, Bo. Keep doing it. Later, Bo.
Yeah, man.
Oh, man.
Hey, Alex.
What's up? How do you say your name?
Hirad.
Hirad.
Hirad, yeah. Pretty good. How are you doing?
Good, man. Good.
Good. So, first of all, really appreciate the chance that you gave me. This means a lot to me. So I'll just jump into the question. So, let's say I want to start a business.
Okay.
And I can have a very grand vision of the business. So, like Apple or Microsoft, they had this vision of like changing the whole world.
Okay.
But I also can have a vision of just making enough money for me to survive and just work on my thing.
Sure.
Let's for now assume that I've chosen the grand vision one.
Okay.
The real question here is, how do we keep working on this business for years when we're worried that it might get outdated because of a new AI or a technology? Or in other words, what do we do when we think our project might not be useful in the long run?
I mean, what you're talking about is strategy. Like, these are strategic decisions that we have to make. Like, you make a big bet on where you think the market is going to be, not where it is today, if you're going to go after something that's that big. But do you have investors right now?
No, I'm a entrepreneur. Say that.
Yeah. Then let's bring this back down to earth. All right, just for your own sake. If you look at the companies that you just referenced, right? Like, you look at Bezos with Amazon, you look at, you know, Zuckerberg, you look at Microsoft, every one of those guys started well off and well capitalized.
Okay.
So Bezos was an investment banker from Wall Street. Bill Gates' parents were really well off and he was well off and whatnot. Zuckerberg went to Harvard, same deal. And so like, if you want to really go after that, you would have to try and recreate the conditions. And I think that right now, the likelihood that that happens, given your current situation, is low. And I'm not saying that to dissuade you, I'm saying because I want to be realistic with you, which is that you need to get your own head above water. Cause like right now, if you don't have the ability to make money on your own, right, from a entrepreneurial perspective, like you need to get your head above water, because the only way that you could stick with something for the required amount of time in order for it to become world changing, like we're not talking even a decade. I mean, those companies, they're, you know, 20, Facebook's 20 something years old, right? Just like context. Yeah. And so the only way to get there is be able to breathe while you're going. And so I think that from a one-on-one perspective, starting a simple business that you can generate income on, that you know you can learn the basics of business before trying to take on the biggest competitors in the most well-capitalized arena absolutely on your own.
I see.
Not to say that that's impossible. It's just incredibly improbable given the circumstances that you just laid out.
Okay.
It would be really romantic for me to be like, dude, go chase your dreams, go do that. But like, I also would rather have you in a year making money on your own so that you can breathe. Because you might find out that if you actually start making money on your own, you might just like that. Because right now it's just the idea of the status of the dream, of that, like it's an amorphous idea. But the amount of pain and suffering that you have to be able to put up with and not make money through that whole period of time, really tough.
Okay. But wouldn't that cause another issue where, because you decide to choose to solve a problem that is small, like mm-hmm. smaller than the grand vision, then you won't be able to scale much?
That's not necessarily true. And also, every one of those companies starts small. Like Facebook wasn't like, we want to be the social media platform for the whole world. He wanted to map colleges.
Yeah.
So they start with a niche and then they expand outwards. And so you okay. want to much more narrowly define your problem before you go attack it. Because what you're going to try and do is build something that's going to be everything for everyone and it's going to be nothing for nobody.
I see. Like
strategy is prioritization. It's allocating limited resources against unlimited options. And so you have unlimited options, but you have very limited resources. And so in order to be successful, you have to narrow the problem that you're trying to solve so that you can allocate the small amount of resources you have to adequately solve that problem completely. And then from adequately solving that problem completely, like Amazon started with books and Facebook started with colleges, right? You've solved, and then you can go adjacent, right? So right now it just sounds exciting to say this, but like it's not reality. Like you have to pick one problem that you're gonna get really good at solving, and that's it. And then you can have an idea that in the future, but real, so many things are gonna change between now and then, and there's so much luck that has to concur. Because if you think about this, zooming all the way out, the biggest companies in the world have super well-capitalized people who are the best in the world, made a good call and had luck. Because if you're number one, you have all the things plus luck. Like if you're number one in the whole world, it's all of it plus luck. The market moves in a direction that you never know, right? And so I would rather you just stick to a problem that you know you can absolutely solve given the resources you have. Learn the skills, make income, and then from there, you can go solve an adjacent problem, or you might decide, you know what, I like this and I'm gonna keep going with it.
I see. Thank you very much. That was really awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. Good luck, man.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. All right. So this is our first tweet break interruption, or not interruption, just tweet central. You're going to lose sleep. You'll doubt whether it'll work. You'll stress to make ends meet. You won't finish your to-do list. You wonder if you've made the right call and have no way to know for years. This is what hard feels like, and that's okay. When I was tweeting that, I was thinking to myself about, I think it was just stuff that I was going through at the moment. So if you guys don't know, like my tweets actually just, they're not ghostwritten, they're just me, and they come throughout the day, like right before I got here, Jason grabbed my phone, I was like, wait, I gotta tweet this, something just came in my head. And I think I was just trying, because a lot of people say like entrepreneurship is hard, but I was like, it's such a vague term. I was like, what about it makes it difficult? And the thing that I keep coming back to that makes entrepreneurship difficult is that you have a known cost for an unknown payoff. You know every day that you're continuing to pay these bills, both in time, energy, money, all of it. Every day you're paying this bill, right? But you don't get the paycheck back. You don't get the reward back. And sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's a year. And sometimes more realistically, it's years, plural, before you get the paycheck back. And the paycheck isn't always money. Sometimes it's just knowing that the thing you said was going to happen happens, or that maybe your wife looks at you a different way, or maybe it's your family that looks at you a different way. You want status within your community, whatever it is, whatever that thing is, that paycheck that you're working for figuratively. And it just comes down to this absolute soul-crushing uncertainty with the idea that no one can actually tell you, and you have this unquenched desire to be able to predict the future while at the same time knowing that you can't. And you have this desire because every day you learn something and then you look back at a year ago and you're like, why the hell did I not know this? Like, I'm such an idiot. It feels like I'm starting all over again today because of what I just recently learned. All the work that I did up to this point is useless. But that's the wrong way to see it, because like, you are the work that you've been working on this entire time. And the fact that you can see what you were doing before was not nearly as fruitful as it could have been is the progress that you are making. And so like, trying to consistently reframe that for myself has been really powerful in getting through harder times. Jimmy, let's go to the next one. DJ, spin this.
Oh my gosh. Hi, you're amazing. I can't believe I'm talking to you. Thank you. What's up? So, yes, I love you. I do. Like, I had to get that out.
I love you back.
Yes. So I run a writing company. I write for celebrities and CEOs because I took your advice and I started writing for people that have more money. And it's, oh gosh.
Yes.
But I also publish my own books. Cool. And I've traditionally published with publishers, and right. I've done really well. But in the future, going forward, I want to publish my own books, self-publish my own books.
Love it.
Because that's just, it's necessary, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But I have analysis paralysis because there's so many options to execute a strategy.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I don't know which option to pick to just execute the strategy for my next book. And my first goal is just to sell 1,000 ebook copies, nothing even grand.
Yeah. Okay.
And then when I settle on a strategy, I get scared because I don't know if it's going to work. Like when I settle on, I'm just going to use like ClickFunnels and da da da. Then I'm like, but I don't know if it's going to work. And then, And then I'm back into the same place, the hard times place. And then I do nothing.
Yeah. Understood. So two questions real quick. So when you say you have so many different strategies you can pick from, you're talking about different topics for the book. Is that what you're saying?
No. So I know the book topic, but different options to execute a plan. So I could use ClickFunnels to execute a plan to sell 1,000 copies.
Just selling it.
Yeah. Just selling 1,000 copies. That's my goal. I want to be able to sell 1,000 copies for my next self-published book.
Have you written the book yet?
No, but the book will be here. That's the easy part.
Okay.
I'm a writer, so that's the easy part.
Okay. Because I always say, I'm like, the book's the hard part. Selling is the easy part.
opposite problem for me.
Yeah. No, understood. Okay. So you want to have a guarantee. You're asking the world for a guarantee. You're asking the universe for a guarantee that it will never give you.
Yes.
And you're waiting for a response in order to move forward from a universe that stays silent.
Yep.
Right. And so you're just talking to dead people and waiting for a response. So like the thing is the person you should be talking to is the marketplace, because they will always respond. Like when you knock, they will open the door and they will tell you to fuck off, or they open the door and they'll let you in. But either way, they'll open the door, right? And so, I mean, let's play this out the other way. What are you afraid of? Because like, you seem very upbeat, and you see, like, obviously you've written stuff before.
Yeah, tons.
Not worried about your writing skill given what you've said so far. So like, what are you afraid of? Okay, so let's play it out. So let's say you have your book. And you pick path one. It doesn't even matter what it is. Pick path one. Okay. So what happens? So you put it on Amazon. You're like, I'm just gonna put it on Amazon and see what happens. All right. That's the easy path. Okay. Then what?
Yeah. I'm scared that I won't reach my number. I'm scared that I'll fail at the goal.
And then what happens?
I mean, I'll survive, but then I still won't know how to do it. Like, and I'm also scared because I have self-published a couple books in the past that didn't reach my goal.
Okay.
And I know that feels like, I don't want to feel like that again.
Yeah. So let me do this then. Let's reframe this, because I have a lot of experience with setting goals. All right. So I feel pretty confident talking about the topic, especially big goals. Make the big goals that you set things that you can absolutely control. Like, you cannot control how many people buy your book. But you can control the amount of actions that you're willing to take that would make it unreasonable that you don't sell 1,000 copies. And so then you can judge how successful you were by how much you adhered to the actions that you committed to. And so if I were to say, you have to sell 10,000 books, not 1,000 books, 10,000 books You have to, or you lose your life in 12 months. You just die. That's it. You die. What would you do?
Knock on every door.
Okay. Like, you're thinking about it, right? Like, you have the leads book, right? There's 8 different ways to advertise, right? And so you know that the more people find out about your stuff, the more people buy it. And you know that there's only 4 things you can do, right? You can talk to people one-on-one, you can make content, you can run ads, right? Or you can get other affiliates, you can get referrals once they read your book, or you can get agencies, or you can get employees to help you out. That's what you got. Yes. Okay. And so if you know that you have to take those actions, then wouldn't success be, so if, let's play this out a year. Let's say that you did absolutely everything on the plan, like your plan of advertising, of letting people know about it for a year, and you did everything, and you sold 999 books. Would you consider it a failure?
No, that would be a win.
Okay. Now, if you sold 90 books,
that would
what's
be
crazy is that it's just a number.
I know. Really, I know. Yeah.
But I just want to reframe this because the thing that you're talking about is something that so many people deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's because you want to control things. You want to control the outcome. And you're saying, I'm only willing to pay this price if there's this outcome. But you're seeing the outcome as the outcome rather than the skills that you develop along the way as the outcome. Because I can promise you this, this will not be the last book you write.
Right.
And so if you get to 100 sales instead of 1,000, then what's going to happen realistically is that you will figure out the one thing or two things that actually work to sell books. And then I'll say, do 100 times more of that. And you can either choose to do that on this book or you can choose to do it on the next book. But the idea of like, I'm setting this 1,000, because you could have said a million books. It doesn't really matter. You're just setting it. You're making up a number and saying, this I feel is reasonable for me.
Yeah.
Instead of making the number reasonable, make the actions that would lead to that the reasonable thing. Like, what can you commit to? 4 hours a day of promotion?
Yeah.
Okay. Then make that the commitment. And I will promise you, if you do that every day, one at the end of the year, you will feel accomplished because you actually did what you said you were going to do. I'll tell you that the marketplace will also always recognize someone who puts 4 hours of work every single day into one thing.
Yeah.
And that you can control.
Right. Don't do my best. Do what's required.
That's right. Because your best might not be good enough.
That's true. Man, that was amazing. Just what I needed. Thank you.
Good. Just promise me that you'll actually just commit to doing the work.
Yes.
If you do that, you do like, I have to get sell 10,000 books. What would I actually do to do that?
Yeah.
Find somebody who has an audience that is relative to the topics that you're talking about. Reach out to that. Now it's okay. If I got one person, they sold 20 books. Okay. How do I reach out to 1,000 people? All have my audience. If you do that, you'll probably sell more than 1,000 books. But you just got to do it 4 hours every day.
Okay.
Cool?
Yes. Thank you. I love you. You're the best. You're the man. I love
you, man. Good luck with the book.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye. What's up, Ivy?
Hey, Alex. How are you doing?
Good, man. Nice hat.
Thank you. I like it quite a lot.
It looks felt.
Oh, my God. It's the best hat for the gym.
Good. So what's up, man?
Awesome, man. So I have two topics that I kind of want to, treat with you. And, you know, you titled this Advice for Hard Days. And it's been tough lately. So I'm just going to catch you up on a couple of things that are happening. So about 3 months ago, my grandmother was diagnosed with cancer. 2 months ago, my girlfriend, the girl that I thought I was going to marry, kind of left. And then 2 weeks ago, I traveled to London to speak at Europe's biggest business event. And on the first day of my arrival, my granddad passed away. And so I had to basically speak in front of thousands of people and keep my smile and then travel back and bury him.
Did you?
So yesterday, I did. Okay. I did all of it. And so the question is, well, you know, yesterday everything just kind of hit me because now I'm back in the office and I'm taking the calls and I'm trying to deal with everything. But the question is, how do I maintain my composure and kind of stay strong, right? Because it's a tough period.
Totally. Well, first off, I'm sorry that you're going through that. That being said, honestly, you've got a lot of good stuff going for you. So this is almost a relatively easier one for me to take, given what you just said.
Okay.
Like, you just asked a question, how do I do something I've already done before? Which is, you got in front of thousands of people and gave a presentation and had a smile and you crushed it. despite the fact that you had other circumstances, right?
Yeah.
And so you ask the question, how do I do something that I already have done? You've already done it.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying is, how do I keep living? And you keep living by keeping living. It's the same thing with breakups, right? It's like, I've heard this quote, and I heard it from Layla, I think, the first time. Like, the amount of time it takes you to get over someone, do you know how long it is?
There's a math. It doesn't matter. It depends.
There's a great math equation for it. You'll love it. It's exactly as long as you decide it takes.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to say is going to sound really dark right now. So I want you to take this the right way. Take it the way I mean it. All right, which is that you had three deaths, right? You had death of a life that you thought you were going to have with a girlfriend. And then you had the death of two different grandparents, right? You had three deaths. But
well, on the positive side, my grandmother is still battling with it.
Oh, okay. She's still battling. Well, we're plus one. All right. So only two deaths now, right? But sure, we can even play it out. All right. On a long enough time horizon, she will eventually pass away, right? It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the thing is that you are already standing it. Like, you're asking, how do I stand it? But you are standing here already. Like, you are evidence to the fact, you talking to me today is evidence of the success that you're asking for. You already won, dude. You're showing up and you're working every day. You're coming here to ask questions, to actually still trying to grow yourself. Like, the stuff that you go through become the stories that you will someday tell. And no one likes epic heroes without epic monsters. And so you have to go through the rocky cutscene. You have to have those periods of time where you doubt yourself, where everyone else doubts yourself, where the walls are crumbling around you. Because have you ever read Shoe Dog? Phil Knight's story about Nike? Even if you haven't, the entire story is just him getting kicked in the nuts for 30 years. That's the whole story. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and then I built Nike, right? And now if he had just said, yeah, I started this company and everyone loved it, and all my suppliers were on time, and I just scaled straight. And as the money came in, I just bought more inventory, and then we just went public. No one would care because it's not relatable. And the thing is that when you die, the only thing that will remain is the story that people will tell of you. And so wouldn't you want that to be an epic story?
Yeah.
And so the things that you're going through are required for the person you want to be and for the goals that you have. And how you are acting in the present already proves the thing that you're claiming that you want. So you already won, dude. Okay. And you're going to just stand it by tomorrow. You're going to wake up and you go to work. And the next day you're going to wake up and you go to work. And then you're going to text and it's going to say that your grandmother's cancer is getting worse. And what are you going to do? You're going to get back to work. You're just going to keep doing the stuff. Like, there's no magic bullet. You just keep going. Because either you keep going or you die.
Yeah.
And if you don't die, you succeeded. Just don't judge yourself on how you feel. Judge yourself by what you do, despite how you feel. So you can feel shitty. You can wake up and have a terrible day and still show up with a smile in front of 1,000 people. And so if you can do it with 1,000 people, you can do it with one. And that first one is the person that looks at you in the mirror in the morning. If you can do it for them, you can do it for you.
Got it. Yeah. Well, that was kind of like the life part. And now when it comes to business, I just have a real quick question.
Okay.
So I built an Instagram audience to over 100,000. I speak about sales and marketing.
Awesome.
I've been doing it for the past 2 years. I've been posting kind of like every day. I know the content game, but the one thing that I'm struggling to balance is, you know how you say give until they ask, and you know, I love it, but sometimes, you know, it takes a while until they ask, right? And cash flow still needs to come in. Yeah. And I run a service-based business. And so how do I balance it out without tiring my audience? Because I also, my community is known for, you know, really being in the comments, chatting with me and being there for me. So how do I do it, that balance line?
So if you want to have a one step away from like just giving forever, right, is that you give in public, sell in private, which is when people respond to your stories, right? When people DM you, like those are conversations that they're usually asking, or they're basically ask, when people ask questions, there, you can still define a scope and say, hey, like at a certain point, I have, like, I've given you all this value, use all the free stuff. If you want more than that, I'd be happy to hop on a call and see if I can help you more. Right. So it's not like everyone buy this thing right now. Right. You're not like getting super aggressive about it. You still publicly just keep pumping all the goodwill and the value that you are, and that'll grow your audience and it'll increase goodwill and all of those things. That's what you want. You're going to keep doing that. It's just that you could still have a call to action that's just in the comment section, or put a story up that says, hey, by the way, if you need help with that thing, I'm happy to help. Like those are very light touch things, because I understand you got to pay bills. I understand that. And so you can put those things out without necessarily damaging the goodwill that I think you're, that you're, that you're obviously building.
Yeah. That was kind of like the one thing that, that I had in mind. Well, yeah. I don't want to take more of your time, but that was fantastic. Yeah.
Well, good.
Irresistible.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. They've been saying no.
I got it. 100 million offers.
That's right.
Right, thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate you, man.
You're fantastic.
You are too, man. To hang in there. You'll be fine. You'll get through it. And then it'll be a story that you'll someday tell.
Yeah. And thank you for everything that you do, not just for me, but for everyone else. Cause I think you're marking a new path. And that's kind of cool.
I appreciate you, bro. Thank you. All right. If you have your back against the wall and you have nothing left, it also means you have nothing to lose. And that makes a very dangerous person, which is why there will always be room for the underdog. You know, I think this is really interesting because I think I tweeted this because someone who had recently commented or said, or I saw a YouTube comment where someone was like, I don't have anything. There's no, why is there even a point to this? Like, why even bother? Because I don't have any of the advantages or whatever of XYZ person. So there's a couple directions to take that. So if you're one of these people, and I'll throw this out there, like right now, if I were to say, hey, why aren't you succeeding the way you want to, right? You would insert whatever excuses you have. You're like, my mom doesn't help me, or I wasn't born in the right neighborhood, or I'm born across the country, whatever it is, right? The natural response to that question is, okay, you're right. You will never succeed. Now what? Well, shit. We got to do something, right? Right. So here we are again, back to doing something, right? Because it doesn't matter. Like the all the reasons that we give don't matter, because they only change your behavior insofar as you allow them to stop you from doing things. And so the laws of action and consequence will always preside. And so you can do stuff, even if you don't deserve it, even if you were born in the wrong neighborhood with the wrong people, and still get the thing that doing the action gets you, right? And the interesting thing to me is that the people who have the least also have the least to lose, which makes them the most dangerous competitors. Because as soon as you have something, you become more risk averse. You can't take the same gambles. Like, I don't take the same gambles now as I did when I started. Why? Because I have something to lose, right? But if you have nothing to lose, then it's basically like life giving you a scratch-off lottery ticket and you saying you don't want to scratch it off because you don't want to lose, but they're giving you the lottery ticket for free. Because what happens? You get the lottery ticket and you lose, and where are you? Just as poor and still having nothing, just like you did before. But in that one ticket out of 20 or 100 or 1,000 tickets, which is phone calls, reaching outs, knocking on doors, sending cold emails, whatever that lottery ticket is, you can get one yes and it can change your life. And so it's like, why would you not take the lottery ticket? And so it's interesting because a lot of people want the yes, but they aren't willing to pay the price for yes. Because the price for yes is 100 no's. And as soon as you are willing to get the 100 no's, you can get as many yeses as you damn well please. What's up, Kevin?
It's the man, the myth, the legend, Alex.
Kevin, man, the legend, Black Tank, looks nice. What's up?
Oh, thanks, man. I have to copy you over here. I don't look as jacked as you, so gotta look at that.
Yeah, good lighting.
All right, so my question is basically, I've been an online fitness coach for the last like 3 years now, and like even progressing from like the first 10K a month like 3 years ago, and like 25K a month a couple months ago, I kind of felt like I got lonelier the more successful I got, even though I do have a pretty big audience now, like over 1 million followers across.
You got lonelier?
Across like Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram itself, like it just, maybe you went through something like that, or maybe you haven't in that sense. I was just wondering, like, maybe how you got over that self-limiting belief, because I feel like that's kind of holding me back.
I want to make sure that I want to clearly understand your question. So you're saying that being lonely is the thing that is holding you back?
Well, it was more like, I know as my lifestyle changes, obviously here in Louise friends along the way, the conversation is a lot different in that sense, but just like, especially from going in person and being a full-time in-person training and going online on top of that, just like a lot more lonely kind of in a lot of different aspects, like losing that kind of touch.
Dude, you just have to join a community, man. Like, just straight up. Like, you just need to get around people who are doing the same thing as you. And so that might mean physically moving to a different area. Because right now I'm assuming online pays your bills, correct? Yeah, right. So if online pays your bills, then you can literally be anywhere in the world. And so where do you live right now?
I'm Edmonton, Alberta. I'm planning to move to Kelowna. It's more of like a fitness town in Canada in like 2 months' time. Because like that was a big reason, because I know more fitness people doing fitness what I do out there. So I feel like that'd be a big help to you.
I would do that. And I would also join a bunch of online communities of people who are like trying to make money in the fitness space. Because you'll find a ton of other people who are doing the same thing as you, that are on the path, that are ahead of you, that are the same as you, that are behind you. And you can get a little bit of some fulfillment from helping out some of the people behind you. But you can also get help from the people ahead of you who are, you know, because you show that you'll execute and you'll do what they say and you'll grow. But this is the nice news is that this problem is super solved. Like, you just got to get around people and you got to be willing to be rejected.
Yeah.
It's just like friend sales. It's the same thing. You go on a bunch of dates. They're just friend dates, you know, go hang out, go get a lift in. I mean, it's fitness. So like, just go ask a bunch of people to get a lift in and you'll see who's cool and you'll see who isn't. Worst case scenario.
Yeah. Have you ever kind of experienced that as you kind of leveled up? I know you have.
Of course. But as long as you keep growing, this is not going to stop. You're going to find new friends, and if you keep growing, you'll pass them, and then you'll find new friends that are above them, and you'll pass them, and you'll just keep going. And so it just depends on how, like, what you see the role of friends as in your life. And so, you know, for me, I just want, my requirement for friend isn't necessarily that they make the same or more money than me at all. It's, do they make me better? Do they have my best intentions in them? Just already two incredibly difficult things to pass. But if someone passes both those things, then they are a friend. And so I would just use that as a litmus test. Like, is this person making me better? And do they have my best, you know, incentives at heart?
Yeah. And how is making friends, I guess, now? Because obviously you're a higher level and things are different with the social status and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, first floor is probably different. So do you kind of have the same standards now? Or kind of like, what is it kind of?
Dude, it's harder for me than it is for you.
Yeah.
No, for real, it is. But the thing is that most of my closest friends don't live here. Like, don't live in the same physical area that I do. Most of the closest friends that I have live all over. And so I see most of my friends once or twice a year. And that's it. And I work in the meantime. But the thing is that, like, the higher up you go here, like, and I'll just tell you something, like, from my level, whatever you want to call that. All the friends I have, everyone complete, like, there is zero social obligations for anything, like none. And if I don't respond to a text for 3 days, there is zero drama. It's not even acknowledged. It's just, we know that busy people understand that busy people are doing shit. And so if everyone you have, everyone who's in your world understands that you're trying to take this hill, then if they're truly your friend, then they want you to take the hill more than they want you to respond to their text or come out with them. Like, I just got invited to a 7-day thing that with a couple friend that Layla and I both really, really adore. But we'll probably not be able to do it because we have so much stuff that we're doing at that same time. And I really want to go. But I also really want to do this other stuff. And I know that I will feel worse about myself if I don't have this other stuff done. And so we're going to say that I can't go. And that's going to be it. And they're not going to hold it against me. And so until you find friends who are 100% aligned with you achieving your goals, who are making you better and who want you to hit your goals, then you just keep looking. But the thing is, like, everybody goes to the period that you're at. Like, I wrote a tweet about this, but like, there is this lonely period that always happens when you start growing. Because it happens is that you're too big for the old friend group, but you're not quite big enough for the group that you want to get into. Right. So you kind of have this path in the middle where you just kind of like keep trudging along. But like, every single person who's accomplished anything material has been in your exact same shoes. and you just keep going. And you keep going, you keep networking, you enter, you go into the communities, you see the people who are adding value to those communities, and you message them, you find the givers. Because givers recognize givers almost immediately. You can see the people who are always giving more above and beyond, and you can understand they get the game. And so like in that first meeting, if they're like, let me see if I can do this for you, let me like take care of this for you, let me help you in this way, rather than like, hey, could you help me with this? Like, wrong person. But if you just start by giving to a whole bunch of people who are where you want to be, you'll get more back, even if 9 out of 10 don't give you anything back.
Okay, that was very helpful over there, especially, I mean, with the community side of moving definitely kind of helps and just giving to those groups and those are the kind of people, especially when I can't be around. Yeah,
if you give out a lot publicly, the people who message you privately will be people who recognize what you are providing. And so like, be loud. Provide shitloads of value. People will message you and then be like, hey, let's hop on a Zoom. Let's grab a Zoom lunch, whatever. And so like you can have a ton of friend dates or whatever that you meet people and see if they have game. And if they have game, then you keep in touch because you're making them better too.
Yeah. You also said that pretty much all your friends are kind of around the world and it's a little different. So you kind of feel like you almost lose a little bit of that personal touch then or no? Like,
of course. Yeah. It's just a trade. It's a trade. So like, if you're willing to make the trade, then, I mean, like, I'll put it this way. If that were the price that you had to pay to live the life that you want to live, would you pay it? That you just have friends that you meet up with once a month?
Yes.
Then that's just the price tag. And those are the Nikes. You can pay the $500 or not, but that's the price tag.
All right. Appreciate everything.
You bet, brother.
Man, you kill the content game and just change the whole thing. Honestly, it's amazing. You gotta see, fly everything down, expunge all your stuff. Keep it up, bro.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. We rolling this Tuesday.
Hey, Alex, how's it going?
All right. Tell me, how do I say your name?
Celesi.
Oh, that's easy. Celesi. All right. What's up, Celesi?
What's up, Alex? Hey, thank you so much for having me on here. So I'll get right into my question. So after doing full-time entrepreneurship for 3 years,
right,
and, you know, raising a family, I got four small children, all under the age of 5. I found myself in a very hard position where I had to go back to a 9-to-5. I'm actually at my 9-to-5. I'm at my 9-to-5 right now. So, so now I'm like in a place that, like, you know, like, I would say entrepreneurship is like you said, it's hard and I know what hard feels like, but after discussing it with my wife, like, I felt like this was like the right decision after getting myself into business debt and other things like that. And I didn't ever have a paycheck to live on, you know? Yeah. So how do I know when it's like, how do I get back into entrepreneurship? Like, now I'm just running my stuff on the side. So, for example, right when I was laid off 3 years ago, I was doing taxes and I just doing bookkeeping. And then I worked my way up starting to offer accounting services. And then I leveled up and I started going after higher leverage. Like, now I started doing CFO services. And I went through that valley of despair thing. And that's probably why I'm at where I'm at right now, you know.
Okay.
Just being completely honest. Yeah. And now I'm like...
Sorry, you're good. No, I said you're good, man. Like, don't worry. Like, I appreciate you being candid and upfront about it, because otherwise this wouldn't be very valuable, because you tell me a bunch of fake information and I'll give you a response to fake information. It wouldn't matter for either of us. So thank you for being honest. That being said, you're at a pretty good spot, and I'll tell you why. So you have a valuable skill set that will always be in demand, because a lot of people don't want to do money stuff. So people don't do budgets. People don't do bookkeeping. People don't do CFO work. People don't do financials. Projections, forecast, no one wants to do any of that stuff. And you do, and you're good at it. So presumably you're good at it because you keep doing it, right? I'll leave it at that. I'm going to assume that for the sake of our call, right? So one, I think it was wise that you got a job because you have a wife, you have 4 kids. I think that was a smart noggin move, okay? Now, that being said, there's going to be a conversation that you probably have to have with your wife about what, because your nights and weekends either are going to have to go to family or they're going to have to go to the new thing. And so I think that you need to have a candid conversation with her and say, listen, my prime, and I'm putting words in your mouth here. So this is, mm-hmm. if I were in your shoes, I would say, as a man, my primary drive is to provide. And right now I feel like I'm failing you. Mm-hmm. And I want to lead our children by example so that when they are 20 or 30 and they're thinking about making that jump, I can speak to it because I wasn't afraid to take the risk again. Because in gymnastics, as soon as you fall off the pommel horse, even if you twist or break your ankle, you know what they do? They try and get you right back on the horse again. And they do that because if you don't and you take enough time off, you start developing these fears around getting back on, you never get on again. And so they want you to get back on the horse. And right now, I think you got bucked by the entrepreneurial horse, and that's okay. It happens. It's part of the game, right? Like it's the scene in Rocky 17 or whatever fucking Rocky it is, where he's like, it's not about how hard you can hit, but it's about how hard you can get hit and keep going forward. Right. And so you got hit big whoop. Everybody gets hit. Everyone fucking loses all the time. I lost everything twice before this time. Right. And so like, you've lost everything once. You still owe me one. Right. You can tell your wife I said that. And so let's get into tactics. All right. So right now, in my opinion, the issue that you miss is you didn't know how to advertise. You didn't know how to promote. And so you have the service. You just got to let people know about it. And so you were full-time as an entrepreneur, but you probably weren't spending 4 hours a day promoting.
And so you're 100% correct.
Right. And so that's what you need to do. So nights and weekends for you is you log out of work, go home, kiss the dog, high five the kids. And then you spend 4 hours promoting. And promoting is you make content, you reach out to people, or you run ads. And given your financial situation, it's going to be making content and reaching out to people. That's it. Literally, if that's what you start your timer, 4 hours, you make content, you reach out to people, and you do that for 4 straight hours every day. You do that, you're going to have more business in the next 6 months than you even know what to do with.
Dang.
That's it. That's all you have to do. Like the thing is, you're in a good spot because you have the skill that there's already demand. Like, I don't have to test your idea. You're trying to provide bookkeeping services. It's a commoditized service. Like, if you do a good job, you're on time, like you are responsive, you deliver things on the first of the month, people will want to do business with you and they'll stay with you. And so you just got to let people know about it faster, because I'm guessing that your rate was based on referrals. You had one or two customers, maybe three. And by the time you get one new referral every 2 or 3 months, one would drop and you stayed there until eventually you couldn't, right? I'm guessing that was the whole story. Right.
Yep.
So you just need to increase your sales velocity, which means you got to let more people know about it and you got to learn how to sell. Because it was just you, right? Did you have any employees?
No, I had a virtual assistant during tax season, but it was mainly just me.
Yeah, then you have the easiest business in the world, because 100% of the revenue is profit, right? It's just you for now. And so you can absolutely get yourself to 10, 20 accounting clients, and you're going to be working like a dog at this point, but you'll be making way more than you are now. And then you'll have new problems, because then your wife's like, I don't see you anymore. You're like, yeah, but now we're making 3 times as much money, and I will find a way to use the money to buy back some time. And you can do that. But ideally, like you already have the hard shit done. You're like 6 months away. Seriously, like I don't normally say that. Like you're 6 months away. You gotta reach out to, let's call it 10,000 people.
Okay.
You reach out to 10,000 people, you'll have the business you want.
Got it.
Even if you suck, you'll have the business you want to reach out to 10,000 people and just ask them if they need help with that thing. Because I'm telling you right now, as a business owner, dude, the amount of crappy accountants and bookkeepers that are out there outnumber the good ones 100 to 1. Like no one's stoked about their bookkeeper. So like it's not hard. And like, think about it. Those guys suffer the same issue that you have, is they don't know how to promote themselves. They're not business people. They're bean counters. And so like you've been in bean counter mode, and you got to get in promoter mode, especially as a solo entrepreneur. It's all promotion in the beginning.
So would you suggest just mainly cold outreach, or should I try to do content, or just go straight cold outreach?
You can do both. I mean, do one post a day.
Mm-hmm.
One post a day, see who interacts with it. So who likes it, who comments on it, you can message all those people, and then you can reach out as well. But the thing is with your profession, finding someone who has an adjacent audience. So, if someone who's an HR company or a recruiting company, right? Like if you can figure out a way to just work with them, they already have a whole engine of people coming in, and just see if you can just get off the backside and give them a kickback just for intros. Like that's a super productive way of leveraging the amount of reach outs. Like you can just reach out to 10,000 business owners and you'll get your nut. But you can probably reach out to 1,000 B2B businesses and see if you can structure a partnership with them that they can refer you business and you refer it back to them. Either of those would work.
Okay.
Man. But yes, content and outreach. And real talk, the content is probably not in the beginning where you're going to get the majority of your business. I just want to just prepare you for that. But the reason that you're gonna be making the content in the beginning is that so when you do reach out, people will go to your page and they will consume your content and then they will decide to respond based on the quality. So think about that stuff as lead nurture more than lead gen in the beginning. Over time, you'll get better at it. You'll start generating business, but it might take you a year or two. Like, it takes time to get good at that.
Yeah. Hey, thank you so much, Alex. I just want to say thank you so much because like the past 3 years, I just listened to the Game podcast like all the time. And that's honestly what's got me through everything. But it just honors me. And it makes me so happy, like as a father and as like a aspiring entrepreneur to meet you and everything that you do, like you've inspired me. And that's the reason why I took the jump in the beginning. So I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you for taking the jump. And I will ask you to trust me one more time, which is that 4 hours a day, have the conversation with your wife, 10,000 reach outs.
Awesome. She's watching, so she knows.
All right, let Celeste take his 10,000 reach outs. That's it. Like on the other side of 10,000 reach outs is you making the money that you want to make and having the skill of promotion and sales. That's it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
100 every day.
Rule of 100. I got it. There you go. Thanks, Alex.
You bet, brother. Life is hard. Believing it should be easy makes it harder. Ugh. Man, it was Dr. CEO Ghostwriter. I feel so bad right now. But you had this issue, which was that you said you wanted to have 1,000 books to sell. And you basically made an equation that was, if I don't get X, I will be unhappy. And so I think the first person I heard this was from Naval, but he said, desire is making a contract to be unhappy until you get what you want. And so it's like signing a contract by saying life should be easy. And every moment it isn't easy, I will be unhappy. Like that makes it more difficult than just being willing to weather the harder times. And so when I do get down on myself, because I do too, I actually had a pretty sad day. I woke up this morning and I actually messaged Layla. I was like, I'm really sad today. I was like, I don't know why. I was like, I'm just giving you a heads up. I try and think, what expectations, spoken or unspoken, am I making of the universe that I feel is unfulfilled? And is that expectation reasonable? And more often than not, I can identify what the expectation is. And once you pull it out and look at it, you think about how ridiculous it is. Like the expectation that I have of the universe is that I should be able to sell 1,000 books because I deserve it. And by the way, deserving is the exact opposite of gratitude. So I want to publicly state wholeheartedly that I am hardcore against anyone thinking they deserve anything. So people are like, get what you deserve, ask what you want, blah, blah. You don't deserve anything. You can get things for what you do, but you don't deserve them. Because if you do get things when you believe you deserve them, then you will not be grateful for them. You will expect them. And then it takes something that otherwise would have been amazing and nullifies it. It's like spitting on a gift. And so I try to take this perspective of, I deserve nothing and I'm grateful for everything. And obviously that's very hard because life is about creating predictions and trying to meet those predictions. But as much as I can be aware of the times where I feel more anxious or more sad or more angry or more upset or frustrated, it usually comes down to what expectation am I demanding from life that is unreasonable? And realistically, it's almost always just any expectation that I have of life that does not care. And so that perspective, and I share that one because like entrepreneurship fucking sucks a lot of the time. Like most of the day-to-day of entrepreneurship is just getting kicked in the nuts every single day for years on end with an occasional glimmer of hope followed by a swift kick in the nuts. And so like, one, you have to have pain tolerance, but that makes it sound super alpha and whatever, because I don't really think it's pain tolerance. I think it's reframing pain as reality and something to be expected and the price that we are willing to pay for the thing that we want. And so it's like the $500 Nikes. It's like, you can't be upset that the Nikes, it's like going to the store and being upset that something costs a certain price. And I know some people do that, which is a great recipe for being upset all the time, but like, it's just a trade. You can choose to not make the trade. And that's the thing, is like, we have the choice. It's voluntary. Like, we chose to become entrepreneurs. We chose to start businesses. And with that choice comes consequences. And one of those consequences is forever feeling uncertain and always dealing with pain. And I saw this tweet by Elon Musk yesterday, and I thought it was so perfect. He basically said, being an entrepreneur is always getting, I'm paraphrasing, what's left over. It's after everyone's done their job, and then there's the really terrible thing that no one wants to do. Guess who gets to do that? You. Because it's no one else's business, and it's also no one else's job. And so, like, the definition of what you are as the founder or the entrepreneur of your business is that after all of the tasks have been done for the people who have their jobs being done, the shit, the steaming pile of terrible conversations that you have, those are yours. No one takes those for you. And whenever there's an unknown circumstance, like we've never seen this before, guess who gets to do that? You. And guess who gets to mess it up and think about it for the next 5 years? Also you. And you just accumulate these scars until eventually you see a second one that reminds you of one that happened 3 years ago. And you're like, ooh, I remember what I did that time. And that didn't work. I will try something different. And hopefully this time it sucks a little bit less. And it's literally that cycle over and over again until the sucking just becomes normal. Because I don't think, like, I don't think entrepreneurship sucks less the higher up you go. I think you just get so used to it that, I mean, I'll tell you a story. Like, I remember the first time I had legal concerns, like an employee said that a wrongful termination or whatever, right? And I would, like, you know, I had all this anxiety. What if they're going to end the business? What's going to happen now? But then I got the second one and my third one and my fifth one. And at this point, like, Elon Musk is always engaged in 100 ongoing lawsuits at all times. If you have shit, people will try to take it from you. It is how it works. And so if you have never had a legal concern, it means you have never had anything worth taking. And so it's not that you are failing. It is a sign that you are on the right path. Like, you don't have hardship if you're not moving forward. Like, the only time that you truly have no hardship is if you're not growing. Like, nothing says stagnation like a comfortable entrepreneur. And so the fact that you're in pain means that you are growing, which is why they call them growing pains. Like, and that is voluntary because we chose to become better. And part of that becoming better means breaking the old self that you had into 1,000 pieces and feeling every single crack that has to happen. And then watching the new fresh skin come underneath of it stronger and thicker than before. All right. Well, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Hope you guys enjoyed One of Zero Live. This was our first shot at this. This was an experiment. We like to try new things here. We're experimental, if you will. And if you guys dug this or this was interesting for you guys, please let us know. And if this also blew, let us know. And if you were like, you know what, this part was great and this wasn't, let us know. Like, we take all feedback. We accept all feedback. Now, we might not do everything you say, but we will absolutely accept all feedback. And so that's the biggest gift that you can give us. If any of this was valuable for you, the gift that I asked for is that you let us know how it was. Otherwise, I just want you to know, and I hope that Mozy Nation exists here for this one reason, which is that, like, you are not alone. There are other people going through it. And so despite that it may feel lonely, you are not alone. Keep being one of zero. Bye.